Earth and Sky.
Because science has such profound implications for humanity, it's very important for people to be engaged in these discussions and to understand what science can do for us, what it can't do for us. So you can't put science in a box and keep it separate from the rest of us. It's really part of the discourse of a healthy democracy.
You're listening to Scott Barrett, an environmental and international political economist at Johns Hopkins University. Earth Sky's Jeremy Scheer talked with Dr. Barrett about the economic and diplomatic challenges of addressing climate change in this century, and about why the tools of science are critical to 21st century challenges.
Let's talk about some of today's greatest challenges and the way in which institutions play an important role in meeting those challenges.
Well, let's start with the greatest one. I think the greatest challenge for collective action, I think in human history, is global climate change. The world has been trying to address this great problem of climate change for over two decades and has so far failed. So my research is partly about understanding why we failed so far and also trying to turn things around to propose ways in which we might do better.
So why have we failed so far?
Well, one reason we've failed is that the problem itself is immensely complicated, much more so than you usually hear. You know, just to put things very starkly, you often hear that climate change will be catastrophic and that it's very cheap to deal with. And I'm afraid that if both of those things were true, we would have already made a lot more progress. Basically, the only way in which climate change can be addressed fundamentally will require a transformation in our energy systems worldwide. You basically need to entirely restructure the global economy, and that is unprecedented. We've never done that. And we have to do it using governments when markets won't do it all on their own, and that also will be unprecedented. But in focusing just on limits on emissions, the consequence is that we've had failures in terms of the participation of countries in the agreement, the compliance of the countries that have chosen to participate, and the failure of countries that are participating but not required to reduce emissions to take any actions.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask a question quickly, just to go back to something you said before. You said that we hear all the time about the potential catastrophic consequences of climate change, but was your point that we're really not certain about the nature or the magnitude of these consequences, and that we might be wrong?
Well, you basically, with climate change, you're basically pushing a very complicated system that we don't fully understand. You're pushing it into a place it's never been before, and we don't know what's going to happen. Now, some of the changes will be gradual, and those changes are difficult for us to deal with because they would be both positive and negative. In agriculture, for example, some areas may be harmed very severely, but there are other areas that may benefit from climate change. Abrupt and catastrophic climate change would be harmful to everyone. And I think that that is the kind of climate change that we really need to focus on, most importantly.
Mm-hmm. So briefly then, what sorts of treaties need to be put in place, or how should treaties be structured in order to get countries to actually do what they're supposed to do?
Well, if you look at Kyoto, I'd say the real problem with that agreement is that it doesn't create an enforcement mechanism. An enforcement mechanism would create an incentive for countries to be in the treaty, create an incentive for those that are in to comply, and do both of those things while asking countries to reduce their emissions very significantly. So that's what we really need. If you look at a treaty that works, one in the environmental area is the Montreal Protocol, and that's the treaty that was developed to address depletion of ozone in the stratosphere. That treaty has been a remarkable success. That treaty has done almost as much as was technically feasible to do to avert wide-scale depletion of stratospheric ozone.
And what is it that made that treaty successful?
Well, it did the three things the treaty has to do. It created the incentives for participation, for compliance, and it did that even while asking countries to reduce their use and production of chlorofluorocarbons and other compounds very dramatically. What it basically did was to indicate to markets that these ozone-destroying chemicals had no future, that all the money in the future was going to be in the substitutes for those chemicals. And once the market saw that and believed that, they started making investments in those areas. One of the devices in that treaty that creates this kind of signal is the threat to restrict trade between the countries that are in the treaty and the countries that are not in. And that device actually has been so successful that trade is not needed to be restricted in practice. It's the credible threat that trade would be restricted that impelled countries to participate and comply with the treaty.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's switch gears now quickly, and I want to ask you some of those more general questions that I mentioned. So why is science important to the 21st century?
Well, humans have a relationship with the natural systems that is inescapable, but that is mediated by technology. Science offers the prospect of us to address some of today's greatest challenges outside of the immediate environmental area we've been talking about so far. You know, think about a problem like malaria. It's an enormously complex disease. We know at some levels how to address it, but if we had a technology like, say, a vaccine, then we could possibly do for malaria what we've done for other diseases. You know, one of the greatest successes in all of human history, and certainly the greatest success for international cooperation, was the eradication of smallpox. And that was made possible by the discovery of a vaccine, the first vaccine, in the late 18th century. And it took us 200 years, but we were eventually able to eradicate smallpox worldwide. So science creates opportunities for us to change the relationship that we have with the natural world, and in particular what it does is it allows us to improve our well-being, the human condition.
That was Scott Barrett, professor of environmental economics at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Dr. Barrett has also generously given of his time to Earth Sky's Global Science Advisory Council. You can subscribe to this and other free science podcasts. Just visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Jorge Salazar, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.